We're all ready to go.
This meeting is being recorded.
Okay, Tom, we are at 7:04. I would call that we call our meeting to order. Do you want to do a roll call for us?
John, I think you're on mute right now.
Me?
Yes.
All right.
Tom, there's Tom.
All right. Okay, so Chair Matthew Mellon?
Present.
Vice Chair Dave Hambleton?
Present.
Commissioner Pietra Gable?
Pietra Gable, present.
Commissioner Jose Brunda?
Present.
Commissioner Stan Eisner?
I'm here.
Commissioner Brian Hyatt?
Present.
Mr. Sean Paddock.
Present.
Okay, and as far as staff, I'm here, Tom Rogers, planning manager. We have Justin Horn, associate planner. We'd like to introduce to you Sybil Petta. She's from with a brand new senior planner, and she's been with us for 2 weeks now. Good job, and we're excited to have her. So I've asked her to come here and introduce her to you folks.
Recognizer.
Hi, Sybil. Welcome.
Thank you.
And then also at the meeting is Chris Collier, and he will be our presenter today, but I'll introduce him in a minute.
Okay. Okay. So with that, we have a quorum. We did send out, or Tom sent out, our meeting minutes from last meeting. So hopefully everyone had a chance to review those. Were there any corrections or concerns noted with the minutes?
Comments, sections where we made some motions. My last name is misspelled a couple of times. Spelled correctly part of the time, which is B-E-L-T-O-N. And the other times it was spelled B-L-E.
And that's in this these minutes as well?
Yes.
Okay. We'll work on it, Dave. Sorry about that. We'll those corrections.
Okay. So any other corrections anyone wants to note? So I'd entertain a motion to adopt the meeting minutes with corrections noted.
I motion to adopt the meeting minutes with the corrections noted.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Moving forward. Thank you.
Who did the second on that? I'm sorry.
Jose.
Okay, thank you.
With that, I will turn it over to you, Tom, to introduce our working session tonight.
Okay, so this should be a really good meeting. We have a guest with us. His name is Chris Collier. He's the program manager of the Alliance for Housing Affordability, which is affectionately known as AHA. And I've asked him, I've seen his presentation a couple of times. What it does is it identifies sort of the issues involved in housing affordability in Snohomish County as a whole, and also examples of the various cities in Snohomish County. It doesn't provide any solutions necessarily, but it does a good, sets the table really well as far as what's causing the issue, how big of an issue it is. I invited him here. Basically, this is sort of like our first step in our comprehensive plan update. This is just providing some good education to the commission so you can kind of have a feel for how big of a lift we're going to have. Chris is part of that AHA group in the cities and together the regional portion of cities. And Chris is acts as our housing staff. And the staff in the creek is pretty small. We don't have a housing equipment. Chris is an expert in housing issues, and we'll help us over the next 2 weeks. We can put some plan together.
Hey, Tom, I don't know if it's me, but I'm really having a hard time hearing you.
Me too.
Me too.
Yeah.
You're just blurring in and out.
Okay. Well, I'm going to turn it over to Chris. We won't have that issue, and we'll see where we go from here. What I said is in your packet. And we'll go from here. So Chris, take it away. You should be able to share your screen.
All right, sounds good. Can you all hear me okay? Am I audible, not fading in or anything? Okay. All right, well, thank you for the introduction, Tom. Again, my name is Chris Collier, Program Manager for the Alliance for Housing Affordability, where we have a lot of aha moments. It's okay to make that joke. I only managed to not make that joke in the interview, and after that, I've been going hog wild ever since I started. So I will share my screen. Can you all see that okay? By wave of hands. Okay. So I've got you on a separate screen up here. So I don't think I'll see your hand if it goes up. So please feel free to interrupt with any questions. I'm going to try and keep it to 20 minutes, but I will stay here as long as you have questions for me or you want to keep the discussion going. So, but I'll get right into what is a pretty data heavy discussion. Like Tom said, it's not supposed to tell you what to do, but it's supposed to tell you or equip you to say, this is why we need to do something. As we head into the comprehensive plan, this is why we need to look for truly game-changing things, because we're in a different world. That's what I'm trying to show you tonight, is that the world of Snohomish County, of the Puget Sound region's housing story, has changed under our feet since the last comp plan update. So a quick background on what the Alliance is. The Alliance for Housing Affordability, it's a multi-jurisdictional collaborative, like Tom mentioned, to provide its membership with data and analytics, which you're really going to see tonight. Technical expertise you won't see as much of. That's policy review, it's code revision, it's writing white papers. You'll see me all over the County Heart Report from a couple years ago, the Linwood City White Paper, and helping out, like Tom mentioned, and outreach. Yeah, I presented recently to the North Creek Presbyterian Church. I presented Rotary Clubs, presented city councils. I presented to the Mount Lake Terrace DEI Commission last night. So that's the third leg of my work, is really bringing this message out to the community, because I'm the only person at the Alliance. It's just me. And so I can't change the world by myself. And it's really spreading the word around and getting this into the community sphere. So ultimately, my goal is to assist the member jurisdictions and the community in understanding why we've got this housing affordability shortage, and when we're ready, using that technical expertise to help us move it forward. So Alliance member jurisdictions, like Tom mentioned, Mill Creek and basically everybody else except Darrington, Gold Bar, Index, Sultan, and Briar. Forgive me if I missed anybody. But I cover 95% of the county's population and land area. So I can't anticipate every question you might have now or at the end of the presentation. So please feel free to reach out and ask that question either during by email or phone or during the presentation. Again, I welcome interruptions. Every question is a good one. I enjoy every question because each and every one makes my presentations and my work better. It gives me new things to think about, new ways to think about things. So getting into the presentation, I am talking about two parts of a housing continuum. Mostly this presentation will focus on home ownership to start. I'll then talk about a little bit about market rate rental housing, and then I'll conclude with a bit of discussion around income restricted or rent restricted rental housing. The tools to support each of these segments of the housing continuum are different. You know, to create home ownership opportunities is different from, you know, market rate rental, or certainly income restricted housing. You know, each of the tools and tool sets are different, but they're all important. They're all related, as you can see. It's like, you know, we're thinking about a Newton's cradle. I'm talking about one end, where I see more and more pressure getting added as we have a growing unit deficiency. And at the other end, you'll see it translate through the system into growing homelessness, growing housing instability. More and more people paying 60% of their household income to rent their mortgage or just to survive. People living in their cars. So even though I focus at one end, I'm really talking about how it starts. And so how it starts is in one slide. I'm trying to provide the regional context for how this issue starts. Why are we having this discussion? Going year by year, looking at new housing unit creation minus new households, I find from OFM, I find that we have in 2003, for example, 1,100 more housing units built than new households created. So we have a surplus in 2003 of 1,100. The year before it was a little less, but a housing unit built and unsold in 2003 does not get demolished. It just goes into the surplus. It's available for the regional surplus. If you start counting in the year 2000 at zero, we have 6,422 housing units in surplus relative to new households in 2003. And we continue to have a surplus until something really dramatic happens in 2015. The recession happens, you see that basically building stops. But then as we come out of the recession in 2015, we have a huge mismatch in new household creation relative to new units. And we erode that surplus down to basically zero. By 2019, we are in margin of error territory in terms of how many of around zero available surplus housing units. And we don't really dig our way out of that in the next 2 years. So Economics 101 says a scarcity of the good, in this case shelter, will lead to increasing prices. This brown line is the inflation-adjusted median sale price for a single-family detached home in all of Snohomish County. And I want to stress that whenever you see a dollar sign in this presentation, and I'm looking over time, it is adjusted for inflation to 2021 dollar values. This is the sale price for a single-family detached home. That's according to their, from the assessor's office, that's property code 111. Has increased in sale price by almost $400,000. That's ending in basically November, December of 2021. Now, most home purchases still are done with a bank loan. They're not done with all cash. And so given typical loan terms that you see in fine print across the bottom, 3.5% interest, a 30-year loan term, 10% down payment on a $700,000 house, just keep that in mind, 26% debt-to-income ratio, no household debt, no student loans, credit card bills, car payments, hospital bills, anything else, real property tax figures for the county average property tax, and insurance assumptions I can back into. This is what you need to make as a household for a bank to say, yeah, we'll give you a loan for the $700,000 house. I checked these numbers out with a local lender, and they said, yeah, this basically passes the sniff test. This is before, this is during the pandemic, but before the war and interest rates starting to increase. So this number might be changing a little bit, but it's a good stand-in. You need $157,000 of annual household income to get a home loan for this median house. $157,000 household. Now, if we know what we need to make, $157,000, the next question is, well, what do we make? What does the median house actually make? And how close are they to buying the median home? The answer is not enough. This is the median inflation-adjusted household income in Snohomish County, up to 2019, the most current year of data that I have from the Census Bureau. You know, it used to be that the median household income was actually above, given these loan terms, the required median income. $82,000 is what you needed. We made $85,000 countywide. And the degree to which these lines have diverged since 2012, 2013, is really where the problem starts. This is single family detached home ownership. And if you can't do this, which a growing number of households can't do, then you're looking at townhomes and condominiums and then rent. This is a separate graph laid on top, but this is the average rent for Snohomish County. Studios, ones, twos, and threes all averaged together. And you can see that the average rent, again, adjusted for inflation, has risen by $700, $750 a month in the last 20 years, a month. Now, this is ending in 2021 in the fall. I looked at apartments.com, and I've actually developed a program to every day now look at apartments.com and see what's actually listed, what people renting today are looking at. $2,080 a month is the advertised average rent across ones, twos, and threes and studios in Snohomish County. You're looking at about $2,000 a month average. This is a direct response, as you can see, layered on top of the column chart and back. This is a direct response to our scarcity of supply. It's fundamentally, throughout this issue and this discussion, is a supply issue, bar none. So let's dig into this a little more. Let's make it Mill Creek specific, Edmonds specific. So regionally, I will look at single family detached home sales city by city within the actual city limits, not just an address like an Edmonds or Mill Creek address, and townhomes and condos. So Edmonds, you see the sale price for SFR and a townhome and condo in the table, and then over the actual city in the bottom left, you see the required income given those same loan terms. You need $200,000 of household income to buy in Edmonds. City of Linwood, Mount Lake Terrace, Mill Creek, the first $1 million median sale price city in Snohomish County and in Snohomish County history. Mill Creek is now over $1 million, and it stays that way even if you add in townhomes and condos because there's so few of them selling. The median price remains stubbornly over $1 million in the city. City of Mukilteo, City of Everett, Lake Stevens, and Snohomish. And I don't have Bothell on here. They're competing with Edmonds and Mill Creek in the realm of really, really expensive. I don't have Bothell on here because they're not a member of the Alliance. And to be honest, my table was getting pretty tight. So I ran out of space. So now let's look. Let me back up. This is the first half of the slide I showed you before. This is the sale price and the required income. So now let's look a little more deeply at who makes what. What occupations allow you to live where? So using the Bureau of Labor Statistics, I look at the 700-some-odd occupations represented in the Puget Sound region. It's Snohomish, King, and Pierce County all rolled together, which is appropriate because if you work in King County but can't afford to live there, you're probably looking at Snohomish or Pierce County. That's the first place you probably look. So this is regional, and I'm looking at 25th percentile, 50th, and 75th. So that 25th is like beginning of your career, 50th is right in the middle of your career, 75th is as you head into the end of your career. So let's look at some of those 700 occupations. Physicists. A physicist in the Puget Sound region makes between $108,000 and $182,000 a year in their career. And they're not able to buy on a single income at these loan terms a single family home in Snohomish, Mill Creek, Linwood, Edmonds, Mount Lake Terrace, or Mukilteo. They're not able to afford it. Emergency management directors and administrative law judges. There's not a lot of administrative law judges, but think for a second. You call up mom and dad. You're like, hey, mom, hey, dad, or your kids call you. I'm a judge. You know, Governor Inslee appointed me to be a judge. Like, great. Have you tried getting a real job that allows you to live somewhere? I mean, when you say I'm going to be a judge, you think, great, your ship has come in. The world is your oyster. You can live wherever you want to. But that's not the case. And audiologists that I throw in here, not because there's a lot of them, again, but as a reminder that a lot of specialty occupations make society run. If you ever need hearing assistance, you're probably going to see an audiologist. And where can an audiologist that will serve you live? Not in King County. And in South County, they're looking at one of five places. Mukilteo, Snohomish, Everett, Linwood, or Mount Lake Terrace. As a townhome and condominium, and you say, okay, well, fine, let's go ahead and live there. The problem is, those five cities combined, only 488 townhomes or condos sold in all in the combined five cities in 2021. Meanwhile, there are 435,000 workers in the Puget Sound region that make between $99,000 and $69,000 a year. You know, I'm looking at single incomes, but, you know, assume that this is even 20% correct. There's a huge mismatch between the number of units available and the number of people looking for them. So that audiologist that you're relying on is probably going to get beaten out of that race for a home. And so when I updated this slide in 2021 and started to see these numbers showing up, I got really grouchy and thought, okay, I'm going to go to the top of the Bureau's median income scale. I'm going to find, you know, how high do I have to go to be able to say I can live, you know, have an occupation that can live anywhere in the county on a single income? The answer is, you can't. The dentistry is the highest paid occupation in the Puget Sound region and cannot afford a home in Mill Creek, Edmonds, and probably by this time, because this data is a few months old, Mukilteo. You know, this is an issue that is prohibiting literally the highest median wage occupation in the region from owning a home. It is no longer an issue. I don't think it ever really has been, but it certainly is now no longer an issue of just the poor, people that need to work harder. You know, dentists, nurse anesthetists, internal medicine physicians work really, really hard, but they can't afford to buy in these places. This is their reality. You know, think about what it means for everybody else that makes society run. So just how much have things changed looking only at single family homes, because that makes up most home sales in Snohomish County. And this data, by the way, is from the county assessor's office. I am actually looking at every single recorded home sale from the assessor's office. Going city by city, here's the percentage of home price change. Sorry for those brackets on the right. That was a glitch on my part. In five-year increments, again, adjusting for inflation, how much did the median sale price of a home change in Mill Creek? You see Mill Creek just five in from the far right. So Mill Creek, median price change in the first 5 years of the century, just over 10%, 2000, 2004. the recession starts to happen. Mill Creek experiences the recession hardest and first, and prices actually declined in Mill Creek in the next five-year period. Let's look at 2010 to 2014. Mill Creek has actually come out of the recession a little faster. Edmonds never went down, but everybody else gets trucked. Everyone else gets really walloped by the recession, and home prices drop in that five-year period. Okay, so this is 15 years of data. Let's keep this in mind, 2000 to 2014, end of 2014. Now, here's 15 to 19. And here's 20 to 21. So let me back up. Here's 15 years. Here's 7. Where Mill Creek's net change in price at the end of the day has increased by 110% since the year 2000. That's the net change in Mill Creek's home sale price. And the reason those brackets are there is because it's explaining the reason the net change is a little lower than the stacked change is because the prices had to overcome that negative value in 2010 to 2015, or 05 to 09. But the point that I'm trying to make here is, you know, 15 years, home prices didn't change that much. They averaged out to pretty close to the same rate of income progression, you know, median household income growth. But then look what happens in 2015 and on, where prices explode. I mean, when I first made this graph, I used townhomes and condos. And when I just made it single family homes, Bothell broke the y-axis. I used to just have this capped at about 130%. And Bothell, I mean, has increased by almost 100% in the last 2 years. And Mill Creek is trying to catch up really hard. So the other thing that I'm pointing out here is I'm trying to reject the idea that, you know, just drive until you qualify. It's okay. You can go live in Darrington. Go live in Arlington. You know, look at Darrington, fourth in from the left. 93% is how much the town of Darrington's home prices changed. You know, on a numbers basis, you're still looking at, you know, $330,000, $350,000 homes in Darrington, but that's 93% more than it was 20 years ago. Darrington. I was presenting to the town of Darrington a couple weeks ago, and I could see everyone's eyes getting wide as dinner plates. Like, oh my God, it's here. This is region-wide. There is no place that you can drive that will get you away from dramatic price increases. So what sells for less than $400,000? Like, I'll buy anything. Just find me homes that sell for less than $400,000. Same approach. Five-year groupings, 2000 to 2004. You see that Mill Creek was never that affordable. That's fine, but was 28%. 28% of Mill Creek's home sales, single-family, townhomes, and condos. That's 28% of total, 452 units, sold for less than $400,000 in today's value. So I went back and I inflation-adjusted each and every home sale year appropriately to 2021 values. That's 28%. So moving on, you see the recession doesn't really slow this down. That home sales continue to happen at, you know, for less than $400,000 in reasonable amounts until we get to the last 2 years. 4% of Mill Creek home sales are for less than $400,000. And I will bet you that those are all townhomes and condos. And so here's the county overall. You know, Snohomish County, including cities and unincorporated area, only 15% of county home sales are for less than $400,000. This is not a percentage that is going to increase. I can peek into the future by setting this value to $200,000. You know, what number of homes sell for less than $200,000? By 2018, that number is basically zero. And that is the future for $400,000 home sales, probably in a year or two. So there is not affordability is hard to find. And, you know, again, it is region wide. Look at Darrington, third in now from the left, has decreased by almost 20%, 17% decrease in home selling for less than $400,000 within the town limits of Darrington. Hey, so, Chris? Yes, sir. Sorry, do I need to hurry it up?
So I'm just thinking, so if you are like newly out of school and your family doesn't have a lot of money, like, because I think the people like people that bought 20 years ago and have equity and are selling a house that's inflated and you move to a house that's inflated, you may not feel it as much. But I think what this really impacts is the new generation are people that don't have that family kind of backing or that we haven't taken advantage of this.
Absolutely. If the ship has left the dock without you on it, you are SOL. Unless you have parents with a boatload of money, you're looking for a juicy inheritance or things like that. It also affects senior households, you know, not to be biased at all, because a senior household, you know, if you, particularly when you're trying to downsize, if you're trying to downsize from, you know, four bedrooms, there's just the two of you, you'd like something a little smaller, maybe you don't want stairs, you don't want outdoor upkeep. You know, even if you're looking for that, what you're finding is there's a huge scarcity of supply of that type of housing that might require you to move somewhere further away, not necessarily because you can't afford it, but because you just can't win that knife fight for one of those 488 townhomes or condominiums in, you know, those five cities.
Chris?
I see Brian, you're off mute. Go ahead.
Yeah, if I can. This hits home for us. We were fortunate enough. We bought our house here 22 years ago, just before your graph there, and are super happy with the price of our home next to the golf course. But I will tell you, this is a generational impact, because where people used to think, oh, I'm going to live, you know, close to my folks so the grandkids can see them all the time, or I'm going to live close to my parents so that I can take care of them as they age, doesn't happen. Yep. Families in Mill Creek currently are moving grandparents out of state to Arizona, where it's cheap. And hot, by the way, and young kids, my kids, and all of their friends are looking at places like Spokane, Montana, just to get out and do that. But they're getting a rude awakening in Los Angeles and Missoula, too. That's, you know, the median price is climbing as well. But they're moving to very rural places that are splitting up generations of families right now. I think that's a huge impact on our neighbors right now.
Absolutely. That's something that I was going to be emphasizing, and I'm glad you brought it up, is I'll talk about it now. You know, it's, think about the social impact of, you know, grandkids not being able to see their grandparents. You know, think, I mean, when my in-laws are here and they're watching my four-year-old son, who's downstairs watching TV right now, it makes me so happy. It's like, oh God, I can just like sit back and eat a bonbon or something. You know, it's so nice, but that can't happen when they've got to travel across state lines. And it matters too for people who are your neighbors. I mean, think about the benefit of having your kids playing with the judge's kids. You know, if they go over to Judge Smith's house, you know, think about that opportunity of opening their world into that thought process. And it's not just like people of, you know, greater means, it's all just different experiences. You know, and also when disaster happens, you know, seeing that you're in the fire service, you know, what happens when disaster, when the big earthquake happens and half your fire service lives in Eastern Washington? Those bridges aren't up. Those airports aren't functional. And you're really going to miss having your firefighters next door, or in more mundane disasters or emergencies, if a nurse lives next door. You know, they're an even faster first responder. There is an issue, a multifaceted issue of community resilience that we are losing from the social and the just the economic. There's so many facets to social and community resilience that we are losing because of what Brian just pointed out, the people are leaving. I've heard of more than one story. That gives credence to that. So it's a huge risk to our communities. So one thing that we haven't talked about yet is combining incomes. I've been asked many times, you know, understandably, but what about combined income households? So far I've talked about single incomes. Okay, let's think about combined incomes with the understanding that 25 to 34 year olds are living with a spouse at a rate of half they were in 1968. And it's not explained by those households living with an unattached partner, boyfriend, girlfriend, you know, spouse and all but legal definition, mom and dad or whatever. You know, so young people are trying to live independently for longer on single incomes. Now, this is nationwide. The sentiment is still there in the Puget Sound region, I'm sure, but it's probably squashed a little bit. And also, you know, looking at all income, all households, regardless of age, the number of single earner, single person households is rising, both numerically and percentage based in the nation. But we can still look at combined incomes, but just keep this in mind that that is increasingly on the decline. So across the bottom, this is the required income, same loan terms that I have talked about before for all cities that I could fit on the table. And then a broader selection of occupations that individually can't afford it, but combined, let's see what they can make. police and sheriff and firefighters. Brian, maybe you can speak to this, that, you know, region-wide, for all fire services in Kings, Snohomish, and Pierce County, the average or median income is $89,350 a year. You know, police, and it gets a little janky when you start talking about overtime and things like that. But, you know, architects, there's a lot of rock star architects out there, but there's a lot that aren't. And the industry makes $83,000 a year. Accountants, museum curators, travel agents, EMTs and paramedics, $47,000. Marriage and family therapists, if you're stressed because your family doesn't have enough money and so you're seeing a therapist, they are too. Floral designers, waiters and waitresses, cashiers and baristas. And because the industrial trades are important to Snohomish County, a selection of the industrial trades that you might see in Boeing, the CIC up in Arlington and Marysville, or elsewhere. You know, so just play matchmaker for a little bit. Floral designer and a travel agent. I don't know, you know, pick two. Their combined income allows them to live in Darrington or Gold Bar. That's what combining incomes means for that household. You know, sheet metal worker and security guard, $110,000. Darrington, Gold Bar, Sultan, Granite Falls. You know, that's where that combined income allows you to live. So combined income is an option, but it is not a solution. It does not open the door everywhere for a growing number of households and incomes. So let's try renting. So I've talked about home ownership a lot. Let's quickly cover renting. Rent has increased by 53% from 2000 to 2021. Median household income is up by 9% in 2000 to 2019. You don't have to just take my word for it. You can look at the Everett Herald reporting that a Lake Stevens household was told their rent was going up by $475 a month in September last year, and they were economically evicted from their unit. They couldn't pay the rent. If you rent today, the advertised average county rent is $2,080 a month, like I mentioned. But look at the square footage of these units. The average square footage is 900 square feet across studios and threes. That means you're renting for $2.30 to $2.60 a square foot, depending on the day. If you bought in Snohomish County, you bought a home in 2021 when prices were high, remain high, you're paying $2 a square foot per month. So think about what that means. Not only is rent running away from your income if you're a renter, home ownership is also running away. You're getting pulled at both ends as a renter household, and you're renting something that is more expensive per square foot than something you can get the equity out of when you sell, if you sell. Renters are taking it in the shorts. That's my official position. You know, HASCO, getting back to rent, HASCO, by virtue of being inside the housing authority, I get to ask the TVA department, you know, what is the rent for a voucher household? So a voucher household is tenant, landlord, housing authority. The housing authority pays 70% of the rent. Tenant pays 30%. When the rent goes up, the landlord has to tell tenant and housing authority. The housing authorities, from my position, I know that the housing authority has seen $152 a month of requested rent increases last year. 12% of those rent increases were for over $300 a month. 38% of the region's workforce cannot affordably pay over $1,150 a month in rent. If they pay over that, they will become what's called cost burden, paying more than 30% of their income to rent, to shelter, housing expenses. All of them do, I can tell you, because no place rents for $1,150 a month in the Puget Sound region. But what that means is 689,000 full-time workers are struggling and severely rent burdened. Severely cost burdened. That's what 38% of the region's workforce is. Are they some combining incomes? Yes. Are some living with mom and dad? Yes. Are some couch surfing, living in a car, or homeless? Yes. The reason I put this in to start with was because I got confronted with, well, Chris, but I found a good deal on Craigslist. That's fine, but there are not 689,000 good deals out there. Just because there's one deal available doesn't mean it suits everybody. It's available for everyone. So last slide, what this means for affordable housing. Comparing apples to apples, rent is up by 40% more than income by 2019. The voucher program, housing choice vouchers or Section 8, were supposed to be temporary. Now they're not. The average household I learned today is on the housing choice voucher program in Snohomish County for 9 to 10 years. It used to be 3. That was the intention. The reason is because 75% of the housing authority's voucher portfolio over 4,000 vouchers. 75% of them are senior, disabled, or both. If you're a senior, you're not, your income isn't progressing. If you're disabled, your income progression is lessened. And so there's no way that you can keep up with the rental market. There's just no, once you're on the program, you're never leaving because you will never not qualify for the Section 8 or Housing Choice Voucher program. As a result, the wait list for a voucher is 7 to 10 years. Hasco has had their voucher wait list closed since 2014. And they're just thinking about reopening it now, maybe. The average time to lease, once you make it to the front of the line and you actually get a voucher, the time to utilize that voucher has increased by 7 days from 2019 to 2021. The success rate is down by 4%. So once you make it to the front of the line, you've waited for 7 to 10 years, there's a 20% chance that you don't use your voucher because you cannot find no place to apply it to, because HUD sets a rent standard that you must rent for below, a studio has to be at or below $1,580 a month. And if you know, you've got to put your voucher there if you're looking for a studio. So what this means is looking at qualifying households. I defined a qualifying household, you know, that would basically qualify for anything, as a household of three and very low income. That's $55,350 a year of household income. In 2019, that represents 77,355 households estimated in Snohomish County. The Housing Authority has 6,242 units or vouchers available. I mentioned 4,000 vouchers, and we have about 2,000 units. That covers about 8% of our qualifying population. Everett Housing Authority has 3,600. Income-restricted units not owned by either housing authority are 10,000. And that's it. That leaves us with 73% of our qualifying households with no assistance available for them. And they've got to figure it out. Is it paying 60% of your income to rent? Is it couch surfing? Is it living in a car? Is it being street homeless? You know, it's yes, all of those things and more. This is what it means for income-restricted housing and affordability. This is why you will never not hear an ask for money from this sector, because the need is so great compared to available resources to support people. So, you know, I told you that I wouldn't prescribe solutions in the slide deck, but I will conclude now by saying I would be happy to talk about that if you have any questions. So recognizing that I'm already over time, I apologize. This presentation endorsed by the makers of Prozac, by the way.
Thank you so much. So yeah, why don't we raise hands and go, Pietra?
Hi, Chris, nice to see you again.
You too.
So I'd like to know your thoughts. Did the state even consider this as a possible outcome when they made the rent moratoriums? I mean, these landlords, I'm sure they're raising their prices because they've had to pay rent for so long when their tenants weren't paying their rent for their mortgages they had to pay. And it just, it seems so obvious. I'm wondering what kind of thought the state put into this.
Yeah, I'm not sure what thought the state put into it. I'm not aware of any discussion or deliberation on the state part, on the state's part, but I do agree with you. You know, what we're going to see coming out of the recession is rents, you know, went up, they were going up, they stayed flat because of the pandemic, and now we're going to try and catch up. What I predict is a 1-2 punch bloodbath of evictions. First is the legal evictions that will, you know, slowly, I emphasize slowly, work their way through the court system because there's going to be so many of them. What scares me more is the financial evictions, like that Everett Herald article I mentioned. You know, rents just rising so far and so suddenly beyond a household's ability to pay or figure it out. It's going to be ugly. Did the rent freeze really stop anything? You know, did it make it worse? I'd have to think about that a little more. But I know it's going to be really, really tough sledding for the next couple of years.
Okay. I see, Jose, you've got your hand up. You're muted.
Yeah. Just a general question. Are there restrictions on rent increases here in Snohomish County? I think I asked that question. I don't know the answer.
No, not that I'm aware of. No. yeah, you can ask for whatever you want, whether it's going to be, you know, prudent is another question. Sure. But no, as far as I'm aware, no rent controls exist in Snohomish County.
No.
Seattle, I think, has dipped their toes into the water with that. I forget, it was quite a while ago, but I think Seattle has kind of flirted with that idea at the end of last year.
Dave, I see you have your hand up.
Yeah, so it sort of follows up to what Brian brought up a few minutes ago. Do you know, like, percentage-wise, so somebody, like, say $1 million house in Milk Creek, how many people are trading up to buy those houses versus starting from square one that don't have, you know, equity from another house? It's a very, I'd say, disturbing story you tell, but is there another little piece of the story that maybe isn't coming out?
Unfortunately, I'm not able to tell you who's the living circumstances that people went from to in home purchases in Mill Creek. I'm not quite sure how I'd get that, but I'm unfortunately not aware of it at this time.
Or just an opinion on your part, with not just Mill Creek, anywhere in Snohomish County.
I would tend to think that if you can tell me what the starter home is to you, you know, square footage, bedrooms, parcel size, I can actually tell you what the price is. And, you know, we can compare that to our understanding of household income, you know, savings and so on. Generally speaking, I would say you're not seeing a lot of new entrants into the housing market of Snohomish County born and raised kids that, you know, graduated from high school, went to college and graduated, unless there is family support.
Okay.
That would be my estimation. You know, to be honest, I'm looking for a house right now. And I regret it. and it's rough. I mean, you're looking at, you know, homes being on the market for 2 or 3 days. You've got to give up every single thing that you can find, you know, inspections and this and that and the other thing. Actually, let me finish the story and I have a better answer. I just realized, you know, and the homes are selling for $800,000. I did not have $800,000 or enough financial power to buy an $800,000 house coming out of college, no matter what I did. I did actually interview a college professor and their spouse who recently bought a home in King County. UW college professor, Google employee. Their combined income is six figures, you know, double. They lost on repeated home offers in King County. And they almost quit the housing market or came up north. You know, that's who is buying your starter home. They have no kids. They're not looking for four beds. They bought something that, as I recall, is three bedrooms in King County. And that was luck. It was total luck that they found that place. It needed six things to happen right for them to have won that home bid. You know, that's what the home buyer's market looks like today.
Okay, Sean, I see Sean, Jose, and then Brian, I think is where we're at. So Sean.
Chris, fantastic presentation. Thank you so much. Is this deck going to be made available?
Yep. I have a PDF all set to go and I'll mail it to Tom right as I hang up.
Jose?
Yeah, kind of along the lines of a question I was asked earlier. Does the Snohomish at all track anything related to first time ownership? I mean, is that able to be collected?
I am not aware of first time home buyers.
I hear national surveys, right? Maybe the survey versus being able to just directly.
Right. Collect. It's much more of a survey. You know, the challenge is always, you know, are you surveying kind of Census Bureau style or are you recording it, you know, kind of figuring it out through other recorded information. A lot of this comes from the stuff the assessor has to record. And so that's how I get most of my work done, is that stuff that must be recorded. You know, surveys are a little trickier, but you could look at Washington State DFI, Department of Financial Institutions, that supports the first-time homebuyer program in the state, you know, gives loans for first-time homebuyers. That might get you close, but, you know, that's by no means all first-time homebuyers. So I'd have to think about that a little more to see if I could get us there.
Okay, Brian, you had a question.
Yeah, just an answer anecdotally to one of the questions about first-time homebuyers. I live in Springtree, a neighborhood here that we have had a lot of homes purchased in the last couple of years, and this year especially, every single one of them was an equity upgrade. Everyone came from somewhere where they profited $700,000-$800,000 on something and or more and put that down. The other interesting thing we find is some of the new developments, our first due district around Mill Creek, a lot of tech folks are taking loans on their stock options. So someone who comes from another country, they're given $800,000 in stock options. They immediately take 100% loan on that. They buy one of the houses that are being built along 35th or whatever. And that is a very, very common story. We've run into a lot of those folks on calls, and we ask about that all the time. Man, Amazon's really paying you enough. You're going to afford a $900,000 house. And the vast majority of them are doing that, which is a scary financial situation. And then last point is just fire service wise, I can tell you that the vast majority of our young firefighters who we are hiring, which in this county is unprecedented, the amount of firefighters we're hiring because of retirements, are all moving to Douglas County. They're moving to Chelan. They're moving to East Wenatchee. You can buy a nice 3-bedroom house for about $450 still. And we work shift schedules so we can do it. The new trend, we have firefighters who in Seattle, this is happening, a dozen guys I know of, they all live in Arizona. And they fly up and work 2 or 3 shifts in a row, and then they fly home. It's a very common situation in California, San Francisco area especially. Lots of San Jose guys fly over from Vegas. But Snohomish County is going to see that happen more and more, and it's unfortunate.
Yeah, my kids just bought a 44,000 house for which they're paying $2.1 million, which is insane. But all of their neighbors are people who commute from Arizona or Nevada.
Yep. I really want to emphasize the point of community resilience with the earthquake. You know, it's going to happen. In the next 50 years, there's a 1 in 3 chance. I previously worked for Governor Inslee, and, you know, the military department scared the pants off us by saying there's a 1 in 3 chance that every single bridge west of I-5 falls down in the next 50 years because of an earthquake. You know, your firefighters aren't making it up from Arizona or from somewhere else. There's a huge issue of community resilience, just to reiterate that point.
Even on the day-to-day, I will tell you that fire departments across the region have a hard time filling the overtime shifts that happen daily, simply because folks get called and they said, I don't want to drive 3 hours for one shift, I'll wait. Right. It's a real, real problem. And I don't know the solution to it, but it's very common. We can just look at Southern California and watch it march right up the coast. So,
right. Whether it's bad traffic or a bad snow that just clogs the roads, you can have real trouble with staffing. And that's bad when it's your fire service, when it's your police. Sorry to foot stomp there.
Sean, I think you have your hand up.
Yeah, I want to take it down after hearing that gut punch on the earthquake thing, but nonetheless. So I'm kind of hearing everybody, and I'm thinking about how we would talk about this, or how, Chris, you and your organization talks this to electeds, because it seems like everyone's kind of, for the most part, talking about how we really want our kids to be able to live in, let's just say, proximity, or our parents to live in proximity, our civil servants to live in proximity, you know, workaday people live in proximity, if you want to call Googlers workaday people. Yet, I think we see this over and over again. The minute something comes up around, let's increase the availability of housing by using density as an option, everyone votes no, regardless of where they seem to be on the political spectrum. Mm-hmm. Because they don't want to be the ones that have to go to the, I'll leave the qualification out of there. That's not fair. But we've seen that happen in our own council very recently. And so how do we help our electeds and our community understand that if we all agree we want these things, meaning the kids, the parents, the civil servants, etc., we need to change how we deliver housing where we live. Mm-hmm. Full stop. No other options.
Absolutely.
How do we do that?
Just one other piece that I know, and maybe Tom, you can make sure that you pass on the presentation to Sabelle or to Justin, is the aging in place in Mill Creek. If you look at our city population and it ages out, it's very difficult. I know my neighbors left and moved to Marysville because they sold their bigger home and they couldn't downsize within the city. But the city's done a presentation, the Planning Commission seen a presentation on that years ago, and it was very interesting and well done. That said, I think, Brian, you raised your hand.
There we go. Oops, sorry. From a living example, having come from Southern California, lots of cities started to allow not just ADUs, but splitting city lots in half and building full-size homes in the backyards. And that was more of a certain cultures wanted multiple generations to live together. And some friends of mine in real estate made an awful lot of money, you know, catering to those groups. And we're going to look at, I know we talked about last year about increasing the ADU size. That is, you know, we didn't make very much of an increase in that because we're trying to avoid two houses on one lot. Our densities, you know, I'll tell you, in the fire service, we have trouble with the houses we're building now. They're so close together, you can't put a ladder between two of them. So that is something that's going to have to come up. It's going to have to, you know, individual lot size and what kind of density we do, because buying two of them isn't an option. We have to split the one we have, you know, or become creative that way, I should say.
You know, something I appreciate those two questions and comments is, you know, what is, and this is a question for Tom, for Justin, for Sybil, is, you know, what is today's starter home, new starter home in Mill Creek? What does it look like? How big is it? What shape is it? You know, what is it? What is the new starter home of today? It's not, you know, 30, 40 years ago, it might have been a 900 square foot tiny little house, maybe a, you know, 1960s, you know, one story kind of brick deal that you see in Mount Lake Terrace a lot. You know, was the starter home of then. What's the starter home now? What is it? You know, where is that? Where does the permitting allow it? Where does the permitting make that the best and highest use that is not outcompeted by, in the case of a single family home, a 3,000 square foot, 5-bedroom monolith that someone's going to buy? You know, where is that starter home of today? Where is that happening? And the answer is, that's a rhetorical question, because the answer is it's not happening. That's the question that I pose to you, the Planning Commission and the planners, is where is it in your code that you're going to see those starter homes happen? If it's not in Mill Creek, you know, not every single city has to provide for every single person, but where is it in the region? Where is it in next door in Linwood or Mount Lake Terrace? You know, it just doesn't happen. And that's really the problem that we're dealing with, that I think I scribbled this down when you were speaking, Sean, is, you know, where is that starter home? And where is the downsize home? Where is it being created in our community? You know, the reality is we're not in the 1960s anymore. Things are different. You know, so let's update our fundamental concepts, though, to today's reality. We still need starter homes. We still need a place to retire to. Where is it? Where is it happening? You know, fundamentally, again, I'm being rhetorical, what we're seeing is the ills of a monoculture. You know, we have one form of housing, period, and that's a single family detached home. And every now and then we'll squeeze in a townhome here and there, maybe a duplex, but not at the amounts that we actually need to support our current, let alone our future population. Go ahead, Tom.
So, you know, with the whole new comp plan updates and all the density that's going to be required to meet our target, going to have a lot more sort of redevelopment in the older areas. They're not going to be in Mill Creek, where our housing stocks are in really good shape. Between us and Linwood and along the I-5 corridor, you'll see a lot, but they're not going to be priced as starter homes. They're, like you said, those towns are still overpriced, and they're going to be right next to transit, so they're going to be even more desirable because they won't have to necessarily have a car or have to have two cars. And that, you know, as time goes on in the social, you know, our habits will change over time, especially the younger people. So I don't know, the only places that are going to have even somewhat affordable is the places that, like you said, have land that, and it's not next to transit, and it's hard to, you pay a lot more for your transportation to get there. You know, Granite Falls, Lake Stevens, Marysville, places that have a lot of land, but you're not going to have it in Mill Creek. We're built out.
Maybe we can start to renting out those self-storage units everywhere as studios.
That's up there.
Okay. Are there any final questions, Petra?
I do. I'm just kind of curious. I haven't looked at a lot of the land in the Mill Creek older properties where a lot of people are aging out. but is there a possibility that if there are larger lots up there in Mill Creek, can that be rezoned to subdivide down the road?
Yeah, I mean, anything's possible. You can apply to rezone properties, but then the market would have to be, I mean, there's CCNRs and homeowners associations, and I mean, everybody would have to be on board. You've seen how council meetings go, and we talk about a duplex somewhere, and it, the idea of that, I mean, it's not going to happen tomorrow. It's going to be something that's going to take place, if it takes place, a long ways away. You know, one of the things that I hate to go down this rabbit hole, but some of the discussion about the sub-area plan that we're looking at between Town Center and 164th Street on Mill Creek Boulevard, I mean, if you have to add some sort of density, you know, where are you going to put it? You know, do you want to put it near the single-family houses? Do you want to, or do you want to put it someplace where it fits? And I think that's sort of one of the things that people will look at. That might be a good alternative to do something. But certainly that decision hasn't been made. But anyway, it's going to be tough to read subdivide existing subdivisions when they're all in a big HOA and they're all protecting their property values. I mean, that's why those covenants are there.
Yeah. So, my second question is, I believe we have as 45 to 50% of all Mill Creek is affordable housing or apartment units. Is that correct?
It's not affordable. By and large, it's mostly market rate, but we are slightly more single family than multifamily, but it's pretty close. It's almost 50.
And that multifamily is a mix of condos, townhomes, and rental units, right, Tom?
Right. The condos are actually, we consider those attached single family. So
okay.
If you include those, then we might even tip to the other side.
I'm wondering how many, what percentage of that qualifies for HUD housing stock? We're talking about the high prices of rent these days.
I'll look it up. One second.
We have some restricted rent housing, and but the vouchers can be used elsewhere.
So I've got, if I can jump in before Brian gets his question, I have a couple points just to make kind of a rapid fire. One is, you know, Tom's point about any kind of new construction, anything new, anything different sells for a truckload of money. That's right. And the reason is the PSRC estimates that we have a 50,000 unit regional housing deficit today, that the region is short 50,000 housing units right now. No, anything new is going to sell for a premium. The first product that hits the market is going to sell for a boatload. And that also, that reemphasizes it's not Mill Creek's problem alone to fix. I would encourage you to collaborate with other planning commissions and your council and mayor to collaborate with their neighbors, their peers, because it's not Mill Creek. Mill Creek can't fix this by yourself. You cannot, and nor should you. You shouldn't have to. So number two is, speaking of fire safety, people are doubling up in single family homes already. They're not supposed to, but they are. You know, that's an issue for fire safety. You know, relatedly, if you're going to design things, you know, if we're going to talk about where is the new starter home going to be built, instead of, you know, getting single family detached homes or detached condos so close together that you can't put a ladder up there, let's design things that actually have fire safety in mind, because what's happening now is not making Brian's life easier. It's not making him happy, but it can if we design it intentionally and we can check the other box of affordability through just different configuration and ultimately smaller square footage. You know, at the end of the day, when I was a college student or when I graduated from college, okay, I rented for a little while when I was ready to buy my first home that I didn't actually do until years later because of cost. I did not need a 2,500 square foot home. I was very used to living in a tiny shoebox. I used to have a 10 by 10 cell that I called a dorm room that I lived in for 2 years. I was very comfortable in a tiny space. I still have no possessions. That's something to keep in mind. Finally is two final points. This is an issue that will take a decade to fix. There is nothing that you can do today that you will actually see, even regionally, that will fix the problem in the next 5 years. This pain is baked in, and we have to accept that people are going to hurt. They're going to hurt tonight. They're going to hurt 5 years from now, because nothing we do short of true, like, call the National Guard, get out the hammers, emergency action, is going to alleviate this issue. There's nothing you can do. we still have to do, you have to take the first step today, but you won't see real results until a long time from now. And finally, when we talk about rezoning and, you know, doing things differently, if you're putting two units instead of one on a single family lot, that is a big fat check to the homeowner. So when people say, ah, my property values, and they freak out, if you talk about a rezone, that is a huge boatload of money you just handed to that homeowner. Whenever they choose to sell their house, we're not talking about mandates, we're talking about selling by choice. Looking at an 8,900 square foot lot with a local builder, I said, okay, what do you sell this for if you build a single family house on this lot right now? He said, $1.3 million. I said, what do you sell the four units for if you can build four on that lot? $600,000 each. That's a total of $2.3 million. That homeowner just walked away with a big fat chunk of change, and you provided relative affordability at the same time. So that's just something to keep in mind. Sorry to hold forth.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Brian, you had a question?
For the group, I think if you, I know that talking to my neighbors, like I said, we've lived here over 20 years, the reaction to more apartments, more townhomes, more condos without improving infrastructure, you will get a visceral reaction from most people. It is awful, the traffic woes that we have from 20 years ago to today, because not one road has really been improved, widened, and we still can't get all the signals timed correctly, you know, and we've added some mass transit ideas, but for the average person who's going to work every day, traffic continues to get worse, and yet we keep building more and more and putting people on lots that it's insane. I mean, it really is. And I think most people will have a visceral reaction to adding more of those items, of those multifamilies or even townhomes and condos if we don't start improving some of the streets, roads, and travel ways and byways that we have, because it's infuriating. It really is. And I think most of your neighbors will feel that way too. And I don't quite think the council has thought that through. Certainly the county hasn't. I know that I've talked to the county council about run numbers before, and they say, nope, your traffic flows are within standards. And I hate standards. That's a low bar. So
have you seen 164th? I live off 164th. So
there you go. Yeah.
You know, one thing in conclusion, I can't stop talking. Please forgive me, Matt. You know, what we're talking about is, in all of this, if I could wave a magic wand and make something like one single thing happen, it would be take the Edmonds Bowl and just reproduce that mixed use, like two, maybe three stories of density in other places. Because not only is that smaller and more affordable, it's also walkable. It's bikeable. You can live maybe within walking distance of where you work. Hey, look at that. We fixed part of the traffic problem. And also, the Edmonds Bowl is the second most financially productive place in all of Snohomish County. The Edmonds Bowl pays for most of and subsidizes the services and utilities for the rest of Edmonds because it's incredibly productive per acre. That's what we're talking about when we say, like, let's change something. It's let's reproduce the Edmonds Bowl style look and feel. It's not, you know, oh my God, condominiums to the sky. It's something much, much different. And that's important to emphasize as we talk to the community is, you know, the Edmonds Bowl is a nice place. Let's do more of that.
What's the average price of a house? What's the average price of a house in the Edmonds Bowl? $2 million.
A lot. It's a great place to live. That's for sure. You know, if you reproduce that and so there's more availability, the price would come down.
Yeah.
But your point is well taken. I mean, right now it's a premium.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Patron, one last comment, and then we'll turn it back to Tom. It's well over our time here.
Sorry.
No. It's good. This is a very good introduction to the issues. And like you said, we don't have to solve these tomorrow, but what we're trying to do is plan out in the next comp plan, what's the right move for Mill Creek, and how do we accept growth, and what's the right kind of growth, and what do we want our community to look and feel? We're not going to solve that tonight, but this gives us a lot to think about, I would say.
Well, this may sound, I will ask my question. It's kind of Chris, if you could send me that information about the HUD qualifying houses, that would be great.
Uh-huh.
But, you know what? I think I'm going to pass. It's too in depth of a topic and we're running out of time. I'll bring that up another time.
We will be talking about this topic over the entire length of the comp plan. But yeah, that's as a commission, hopefully people were enthralled and interested in this because that's the idea is where we're going.
Yeah,
that said, Tom.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I'll let Chris wrap up and then turn it back to Tom.
Yeah, it's something that I just hope that, you know, I wasn't trying to be preachy, but I hope it's something that leaves you feeling like you know more, you have your arms better around the issue and what, why we are where we are, and, you know, where some of the pain points are and how we can think about this. You know, there's a lot more to talk about, but at the end of the day, everyone has a valid voice in shelter. Everyone has an experience with shelter, whether it is a home, an apartment, a condo, a townhome, or a bridge, or a tent, or a car. Everyone has experienced shelter. Everyone. And everyone's voice matters. And so really, at the end of the day, you as planning commissioners don't want to make the wrong decision that gets people there with pitchforks and torches and burning the building down. You know, and I think as people talk about this and hear this issue of like, oh, we're talking about the Evans Bowl, not this horrible thing that I was imagining. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, so it's really, we're trying to get people to think about what does shelter mean to us as a culture, and rethink that, because at the end of the day, one thing I didn't mention is, you know, really we're at the music is stopping for the single family detached home, white picket fence, 2.5 kids and a dog dream of the post-war suburban experiment. You know, so now it's time for us to think a little differently. Like, how can we move forward in a way that is socially equitable and financially responsible for our city? So that's kind of what I was hoping to equip you with to discuss as you head into the comp plan. No pressure.
I wasn't going to get into this for a number of reasons, but it seems to me that we have to look beyond our narrow scope. The models of housing in Europe have been up and running since the 1960s, the immediate post-war era. And there are places in Sweden that I visited in 1959 where they had housing that was built in concentric rings to deal with different levels of age groups and of the population. I mean, this is not rocket science if you look beyond the scope of our domain.
Okay, thank you so much. That was a great discussion. There's going to be a lot to talk about as we put our comp plan together and make strategies that are consistent and work together with the rest of the region, as Chris talked about. I mean, everybody has different strengths and weaknesses and opportunities to participate in this. And it's going to be a great discussion and sort of be lively. So, wrap that up. You know, I just want to make sure everybody had it. Of an understanding of the issues before we get started, and it seems like we're trying to get started. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris.
Thank you. Thank you very much. You have a great night.
Thank you.
Sorry to go over time. Bye bye.
Okay. Bye bye.
That moves us to for the good of the order, Tom. So,
yeah, I've got several items for you tonight. Can you hear me now? Is that repaired?
Better.
The sound? Okay. So first, I mean, we already mentioned this, but Sybil is our new senior planner, and she's joining us, and so I've invited her to come and join us tonight. And Justin, he's been here a few months, so you kind of are used to seeing him, but anyway, so that's our new staff. I wanted to give you an update about the comprehensive plan, a topic we were talking about last month. The City Council did listen to the Planning Commission / staff recommendation, and after discussing it for quite some time, decided not to kind of go forward as a part of this annual review cycle. And if I had to put my finger on why, I think that probably two things. One was that they read the notes from the meeting of the public and they got to heart. And I think also that because they're going to be doing a big comprehensive plan update a couple of years to sort of take a little piece of it, you'd like to look at it in the scope of the larger. So we will not be pursuing that further. Number three, the wetland buffer code. We have sent the, we talked about that last month, and we're moving forward with that. That was sent to the Department of Commerce, and we've got some comments back from the Department of Ecology already, so we're looking at making some slight tweaks to that. It's likely that that won't come back until May, because we still haven't done the CEPA or, you know, the environmental analysis on that yet. That hasn't been issued, but we are in the Department of Commerce. There's a 60-day cycle, so So that is moving forward, but we'll be coming back with that probably in a couple months. So I'm not sure if we'll be meeting next month or not. And then lastly, I just want to say thanks to the commission for all your hard work. And this is my last planning commission meeting, as I'm going to be retiring next month. And so working with the commission that's here now and all the past commissions has been a real honor and a privilege. And I've learned so much from it. And your work has really resulted in a lot of great things for this city. I mean, no city's perfect, but this city has a lot going for it. And it's been a real pleasure over the last 30 years to have been a part of its development. So this is it. So
we're going to miss you.
Yeah, there may be a, there's a rumor around that on Friday, the 15th at 2 o'clock, there might be cake and juice in the council chambers, but
there you go.
I can't guarantee that with COVID protocols and stuff. But if there is, I'll make sure that anybody that wants to come and say goodbye to me and take your hand, you'll all get an invite. So,
okay, great. Thank you. Well,
Tom, we just wanted to say thank you very much. I've lived in the city, like I said, a little bit, not a ton, but you've been a calming voice for the city for a long time, which has been greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Yes, on behalf of this planning commission and the many planning commissions that you've staffed over the years, Tom, it's a huge thank you. Your consistency, your forethought, your ability to navigate the city through rough waters has brought us amazing things like Town Center, and now we're seeing it at the farm. And that is due to your amazing staff work and the people you've worked with, and great collaboration from the planning commission and our elected officials. And so, you know, thank you for your many years of service to the city.
Thanks.
I can echo that as well. And most of you know that I come from a mixed bag background, so I get to be observant of Tom's contribution from a little different point than most of you. As a consultant, as a planner, staff planner, now as a planning commissioner, can't say enough good things about the work that you've done and the contributions that you've made and what you leave behind.
Thank you.
Okay. Look at all the goofballs look at all the goofballs you provided.
So any other good of the order items?
That was my last thing. It's just thanks a lot for all the good years, and I'll see you. You know, I still live nearby, and I'll be hanging out in Town Center a lot. So if you happen to see me, come by and I'll buy you a cup of coffee.
Come spend your money at Mill Creek. Yeah.
Starbucks awaits you.
Yeah, well, I'm not coming by for coffee, pal. But we'll work something out. We'll be all right.
All right. Yeah. Well, options are open.
There you go. Okay. I do have a question. Absence has been a little bit of communication issues, but also I've been gone for a little while. I've just gotten back from basically my winter vacation. But I believe April, my term is up, and I don't know if that has been discussed about someone else coming on board or what we're going to do with that. So I'll leave that to the group, I guess. I don't know if it's been discussed or what we do.
A number of our terms do expire in April, and I believe the city will have a new recruitment out, Tom. I haven't seen any. I haven't looked, honestly. My terms run. Brian.
Justin's been working with communications on that. We've had some discussions about doing the recruiting, but you're right. So we want to do the recruitment and have interviews in time for the May meeting. So
there you go.
That will be coming. Those of you that are expiring, you'll get a notice that your term's expired and asking if you want to send me a letter of interest. And it'll also be on the city's webpage and probably on Facebook and other avenues of communication to city users.
Okay. Perfect, thank you.
So it's Jose, Brian, and Matt are up in 22.
I don't call off the top of my head. I looked at that a few weeks ago, but I don't. I remember Matt was on there.
Yeah.
And Brian, so.
Yeah, I'm looking at the webpage here.
Okay.
Multi-screen, I'm impressed. Any last tweets before I call for a motion to adjourn?
Thank you for your service, Tom.
Thank you, Tom.
Just thank you for your service, Tom.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Yeah, thank you, Tom. Wow. So with that, a motion to adjourn, your last meeting?
For me.
Tom's last. Yeah, second on that motion to adjourn?
Second.
Who made the motion and who did the second?
Stan made the motion.
Okay.
Sean seconded the motion.
Okay.
With that, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Well, once again, Tom, thank you so much from myself and the rest of the Planning Commission, current and past.
Thanks, everybody.
All right. Take care, guys.
Have a wonderful night. Thank you, everybody.
Bye-bye.